Lucy Pierce, narrator.
This is from Missing Presumed by Susie Steiner. Perhaps his name's Terry, she thinks sadly. Too late to ask now. Shall we get the bill? He hasn't even asked about her name, and most men do. Manon, that's a funny name. Is it Welsh? But in a sense, it's a relief, the way he just ploughs on. The waiter brings the bill, and it lies lightly curled on a white saucer with two mint imperials. Shall we split it? Says Manon, throwing a card onto the saucer. He is sucking on a mint, looking at the bill.
To be fair, he says, I didn't have any wine. Here.
He shows her the items on the bill that were hers. Carafe of red and a side salad. Yes, right, okay, she says, while he gets out his phone and begins totting up. The windows are fogged, and Manon peers at the misty halos of Huntingdon's festive lights. It'll be a cold walk home past the shuttered-up shops on the High Street, the sad, beery air emanating from Cromwell's and out toward the river. This is from English Country Gardens by Ethne Clark and Clay Perry. To many, the cottage garden is the ideal and often serves as a model when a new garden is being planned, particularly in these stressful times when we yearn to recapture the past in an attempt to reassure ourselves. But as the image of a cottage garden varies from person to person, so their interpretations differ distinctly. Some would hold that a cottage garden must consist of vegetables and fruit grown in beds on either side of a straight path leading to the front door, with flowers and shrubs mixed in artless merriment around the outer perimeters of the property. Others scoff at this and decree that shady walks winding through beds in which flowers, vegetables and shrubs are randomly mixed are the sign of a true cottage garden. This is from The Mill on the Floss by George Eliot. Now I turn my eyes towards the mill again and watch the unresting wheel sending out its diamond jets of water. That little girl is watching it too. She has been standing on just the same spot at the edge of the water ever since I paused on the bridge. And that queer white cur with the brown ear seems to be leaping and barking in ineffectual remonstrance with the wheel. Perhaps he is jealous because his playfellow in the beaver bonnet is so rapt in its movement. It is time the little playfellow went in, I think, and there is a very bright fire to tempt her. The red light shines out under the deepening grey of the sky. It is time, too, for me to leave off resting my arms on the cold stone of this bridge. That little girl is watching it too. She has been standing on just the same spot at the edge of the water ever since I paused on the bridge. And that queer white cur with a brown ear seems to be leaping and barking in ineffectual remonstrance with the wheel. Perhaps he is jealous because his playfellow in the beaver bonnet is so rapt in its movement. It is time the little playfellow went in, I think, and there is a very bright fire to tempt her. The red light shines out under the deepening grey of the sky. It is time, too, for me to leave off resting my arms on the cold stone of this bridge. Now I turn my eyes towards the mill again, and watch the unresting wheel sending out its diamond jets of water. That little girl is watching it, too. She has been standing on just the same spot at the edge of the water ever since I paused on the bridge. And that queer white cur with the brown ear seems to be leaping and barking in ineffectual remonstrance with the wheel. Perhaps he is jealous because his playfellow in the beaver bonnet is so rapt in its movement. It is time the little playfellow went in, I think, and there is a very bright fire to tempt her. The red light shines out under the deepening grey of the sky. The red light shines out under the deepening grey of the sky. It is time, too, for me to leave off resting my arms on the cold stone of this bridge. It is time, too, for me to leave off resting my arms on the cold stone of this bridge.